Hello, it's Rodders here. Thanks for listening to this audio boo. Now, what you're about to hear is a show that was broadcast live on the 5th of May 2013. If you'd like to join in the debate, please post a comment below or send me an audio boo and we'll play them out on the next show. Cheers, hope you enjoy the show.
Martin Heidegger claimed that idle talk is something that anyone can take up, which releases one from the task of genuinely understanding. He wrote of public disclosedness of being with one another, where the loudest idle talk and the most ingenious curiosity keeps things moving. Where, in an everyday manner, everything, and at bottom nothing, is happening. We have a different view. We believe that the only way to reach the truth is by talking. Like a man panning for gold in a dung heap, in amongst the blither blather, bad puns and nonsense, one might find a single grain of truth. This is Idle Talk. Open your mind and then your mouth.
Good evening, this is Idle Talk live on oneradio.org. Tonight, we're asking, given the way humans are, given our human nature, what is the best form of government? What should the state do? And why do we even need a state? Those are some of the questions we'll be answering tonight. So, just off the top of your head, we like to start each show with a question. The question is, what do you think is the best form of government? It could be an oligarchy or a democracy, or be as specific or as vague as you want with the answer. We just want to throw ideas out there into sort of a big metaphorical melting point. Oh, hello, I'm Rodders, by the way. And we just want to know, what do you think is the best form of government and why? And if you could answer that, but by also, you don't have to, but it'd be nice if you could also say why that's the best form of government in relation to how we act as humans, our human nature. Tonight we're looking at, I guess this is sociology meeting politics. We're going to discuss what the best form of government should be and what human nature is. We're going to look at two thinkers tonight who have very, very different views on what comprises the best type of state. These are Thomas Hobbes, an English philosopher, you know, flying the flag for England. Nothing wrong with a bit of patriotism. We also have John Stuart Mill, one of the most important utilitarians of ever, in fact. One of the founding fathers, one who really brought that tradition of ethics to the forefront of philosophical debate. So tonight it works like this. It's an open discussion. It's a philosophy show, but don't let that word put you off if you've never done philosophy at uni or even been to uni, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just a word. It just means answering constant questions. You know that kid that asks, why? The odds are that will become a philosophy student. And the ones that carry on asking those questions move on to academia. I, on the other hand, have not moved on into academia. I graduated with a nice bachelor's honours degree. I like to ask why, but don't really like writing the answer. So hence I'm doing a philosophy radio show. The best way for you to get in touch with me tonight is, of course, the shoutbox, oneradio.org/s, but best of all. So that's what we're going to do tonight. This show is probably going to be a bit more ramshackle than usual. I wasn't meant to have a co-host tonight, but strangely they haven't turned up. Hopefully they're just rude and nothing bad has happened. But you do worry when stuff like that happens, you know, when you have things, but yeah, never mind. With any luck, nothing untoward has gone on. But the show must go on. This show is, of course, broadcast live from the poop deck of the ship of Theseus. And it's going out on oneradio.org. The Skype name, rodders.com, spelled R-H. We're going to look at... just keep your question, ideas coming in. Answer to that question I asked at the beginning of the show. What's the best form of government? Aquave says, oligarchy is not a bad idea. Less chaotic than the current system. Aquave says, my remark earlier, I said, philosophers are the ones who carry on asking why. He says, not all. The ones who ask why could be future engineers. Well, yeah, I suppose if they ask why doesn't my television work, why is there not a sprocket on that ratchet, maybe yes, if they ask very specific, pernickety questions. Engineers, no offence, but the engineers tend to miss the point when it comes to philosophy. I remember when I went to an open day before when I was choosing my university, the lecturer gave a sample talk and he said, you've got a situation, guys, there's a train hurtling towards a group of people. There's five people, and the only way to stop this train is to push a fat man in front of the train and stop it. So the option is classic utilitarian argument. Should you kill one person to save five? And a man, someone's son, someone's father, the son must have just probably didn't go to that uni and just died of embarrassment. Actually, I'm an engineer and there are safety mechanisms in place to stop the train hurtling towards those people. And you just felt like saying, congratulations, you've totally missed the point of a thought experiment. They don't have to be watertight or, absolutely... They're not meant to be... They're to illustrate a point. They don't have to work in reality as such. It's like, films. You know, they're not always real. They're full of metaphors and imagery, and the story is more important than what you actually see. Engineers tend to miss the point in my... in my empirical experience of the world. So get on those Skype lines, write in the chat box now, what is the best form of government, and how does it take account of human nature? Perhaps you think we're naturally argumentative, so we need a positive outlet, i.e. democracy. I'm giving you all the answers here. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll hopefully come back and read out some of your answers.
Idle Talk on One Radio.
This is Idle Talk. Tonight we are asking, what is the best form of government, bearing in mind what humans are really like? First we should probably... Let's take some suggestions in the chat box. Good old bit of cynicism going on there. May says, I don't think there's such a such thing as a good government. They're all too busy lining their own pockets. Aquave agrees. He says, we have to select the least bad form of government. So in that, you're sort of tacitly agreeing that we need a government. What would life be without government? Maybe it's a necessary evil, as you put it. So we're talking about how human nature relates to it. So let's answer the question of what is our human nature? Because that's fundamental. Governments are a product of us, aren't they? We make them. Like everything, money, well, everything related to us, money... status, government, it's all sort of imaginary. We've sort of made it up and imposed it upon ourselves. That's what gives government authority, is the fact that we let it have authority over us, and in fact want it to have authority over us in many situations. It takes away the burden of responsibility. Thomas Hobbes, he was writing around the time of the English Civil War, and he believed that he wrote a book called Leviathan, and Leviathan is a metaphor for basically humanity, because a Leviathan's a many-headed monster. So he describes this graphic and horrific depiction of what the state of nature would be, i.e. life without a government. So a state of nature just means life without the government, how we would be just naturally. He says it's just individuals. There'd be no allies. It'd just all be individuals. He was an egalitarian, which means he considered people were born equal. And by that, that doesn't mean... Often when we say, oh, well, we're all equal, aren't we? We often think that means we have equal rights. But forget about rights. All egalitarian and equality means in this state that we're all roughly equal in terms of our strengths and our powers and what we desire. The trouble is, and this is crucial to Hobbes, what we desire is stuff like food and money and gold and bits and bobs like that. These are some of these things are quite scarce. Natural resources are scarce. So imagine you've got a gang of 100 people and there's a cornfield. You'll all want this cornfield because you'll all want to eat. And that's what we have in common. And basically, he described without government, that it would be a war of all against all. Just every man for himself. Just an absolute... It would just lead to absolute... carnage. Aquave sums up, red in tooth and claw, which includes humans. Aquave says nature is red in tooth and claw, which includes humans. That's pretty much what Hobbes said. He said it would be a war of all against all, brother against brother. And he says that And something that's, I think, a very obvious, a very ominous, and I think, well, quote from Hobbes is Leviathan, which I think is, it really sums up how horrific he wants us to view the state of nature as. He said that even the strongest must sleep, even the weakest might persuade others to help him kill another. So even if you're the biggest, baddest, strongest person out there, even you have to fight, because, you know, you have to sleep. That's ominous, isn't it? Even the strongest must sleep. So everyone is, in a sense, you know, some of us are bigger and smaller, and the smaller people can all gang up against the big people. So we're all roughly equal. So no one's really going to win. This is just going to be, this is basically just going to be a state of anarchy. It's going to be an absolute, I don't mean state as in government, I mean state of affairs, wrong word to use really, but it's just going to be absolute carnage. Hobbes view people as just, I'm paraphrasing, but there's a quote that he says that life's brutish and short, where people are naturally self-serving and so humans he viewed as just absolute evil and selfish creatures. Do you think Hobbes is right? Do you think Hobbes is going too far? Let me know. Do you think are humans as brutish as Hobbes makes out? Do we have any people who take umbrage with that? Do you think Hobbes is wrong? May writes in, democracy does not work, communism does not work, not sure what would. What do you mean democracy doesn't work? It seems to work at the moment, doesn't it? I'm all right. My life seems reasonable. Define your terms. When you say a government doesn't work, I mean, sure, it's a bit of a shambles and our economy's not great, but there's not anarchy, is there? Is there? I don't know. Unless you live in, I guess, Croydon last year when there was some... But there's intermittent scuffles everywhere, isn't there? I think we'll go into now what a good government should be, according to Hobbes. Hobbes, because of our nature, just our selfish nature, where we just want to fight over scarce resources such as food and natural resources and things, that we've got to, the only way is to have a tyrannical government, a monarch, a man or woman, king or queen that's in charge. And the only way to stay alive and to avoid dying in the hellish state of nature is to surrender our rights to the sovereign. The job of the sovereign is not to represent us as individuals, but it's to represent us, although society was all one person. That's back to Leviathan. Go into Google now, write in Google Images, Thomas Hobbes Leviathan, and you'll see a picture. Hang on, it should be on my... Yeah, seeing out of the corner of my eye there, it's on my bookshelf. And it shows a picture of the book cover, in most editions, is a man comprised of many other men, and the head is wearing a crown, which signifies everyone being united under the sovereign, because we surrender our rights to the sovereign, the sovereign represents us all, as we were best represents us all as if we were all just one person. There's sort of two theories of political representation. One where people choose a sovereign and instruct him. That's kind of an attitude we have now, although it doesn't actually work in practice. We say, oh, well, you know, the government are our servants. We say that a lot. Hobbes would go for the opposite. He says, when we appoint a sovereign, we simply tell them to keep the peace. That's all we do. That's as far as our instructions go. And then the sovereign must do anything necessary in order to keep the general peace. So if it means imprisoning a portion of the population, then yeah, the sovereign is well within its rights to exercise that power. It is actually similar to our current system of government, because we have an election every 5 years, a general election every 5 years. I know we have local representation, but on a national scale, we vote in the government, and then, unless they decide, oh, let's have a referendum on whether Scotland's independent or stuff like that, we have no control over them. We vote them in for 5 years and can do nothing We can do absolutely nothing. Hobbes did say that although we... This is an authoritarian state. But Hobbes does sort of have a little caveat where he says that... although we do surrender ourselves to the sovereign, we do not give up fundamental things that would relate to our survival. There's a graphic description in Leviathan of somebody brawling with their executioner because they've been sentenced to death. You still have the right to defend yourself because, after all, the only reason we appeal to a sovereign is not because it's a particularly nice idea. It's simply the only way, as far as Hobbes was concerned, to escape this sort of battle royale style scenario where everyone is just ripping each other's heads off, fighting. This shows how I guess I've lived in peaceful times, because my first thought is of children fighting in the playground over Pokemon cards. I suppose that it still works as an analogy though, doesn't it? Because the Pokemon cards in this situation are a scarce resource which we all which all the children want, so they all have that basic equality that they all desire Pokemon cards, and they're all roughly, they're all in year seven, say, so they're all about the size of garden gnomes, and so roughly are equal in strength, and so unless the teacher comes and intervenes, it would just be a war of all against all in the playground. Although where this analogy falls apart and should be discarded is where children, they don't really agree. They don't sort of say, all right, then we'll submit to the sovereign. They're just thrown in school and made to obey. Although that's pretty much how the sovereign works, I guess, because I don't know, I didn't read this chapter in enormous detail, but the sovereign seems to arise almost naturally, and it doesn't have to be one person. It's just generally thought of that. It can be the state. So the state, the government as a whole, so you can have all the ministers and the police and all that lot acting as if society as a whole is one person. So that is Hobbes's view. Hobbes's view on human nature, and so he basically wants a dictatorship. Doesn't really see the point in representative democracy, or he certainly wouldn't see the point of direct democracy. So who agrees out there? Do you think Hobbes is being too harsh? Do you think he's got a problem somewhere? Or do you think there's a problem in his theory? I had a couple of comments in. Phil said, does it matter who's in charge? At the end of the day, we're all just a collection of cells trying to survive. Surely it wouldn't be any different if parrots were in charge. Aquave says, sometimes I think parrots are in charge. What is this? An episode of Have I Got News For You? It's all gone a very lowbrow pseudo-political satire in the chat box. I get Phil's point. Phil, you're sounding very much like a Hobbesian thinker, that we are just all these individual cells all fighting for survival. So as long as we surrender to something, I guess, then we stops us killing each other. The problem with sovereigns is that power, Aquave writes in, the problem with sovereigns is that power tends to corrupt, and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely, as the old quote goes. It's a fair point. But that's why Hobbes left intact that little caveat of you don't give up your right to self-defense. And also, if the sovereign isn't following that logic, he said, well, the sovereign is meant to represent society's interests as a whole. And if it wasn't doing that, if it was just being totally unsubtly selfish, then I think Hobbes would see it as fine or just inevitable that there was a revolt. Do you think? I want to ask, what do you think of human nature? What are humans really like? Pick up Skype now and let me know. But in the meanwhile, we're going to go for a short break, and I've picked a song that I think typifies what the rule of the sovereign should be like, according to Hobbes. We've got Motorhead with King of Kings. This is One Radio. This is Idle Talk.
Idle Talk on One Radio.
Behold the King. The King of Kings.
knees tight.
Having a rave in Plato's cave.
Good evening, you're listening to idletalk1radio.org. So, do you think Hobbes is being a bit harsh? Are people really as nasty as and brutish as selfish as Hobbes makes out? Aquave has written in, if Hobbes had suggested democracy, he would have seen firsthand the downside of a monarchy in the form of decapitation. He wouldn't suggest democracy, would he? There's a reason he suggests a monarchy. It's because he lived through the English Civil War, and his whole the book Leviathan is very much tainted by his experiences in the Civil War. He saw brothers and family, brothers turning on brothers, families being ripped in half in the English Civil War. So he really did live through the most horrible of times. So it's quite understandable why he thinks that mankind is this most brutal and horrible of beasts. So, that's sort of why he thinks, you know, it's a war against all, and why he wants to go to such extreme measures in order to provide our security and safety in by just having a sovereign. Because he did live through the worst of times, but it was a pretty big blip, but could you just consider that as a blip? Is that generally how humans are? I'd go down the more Humean route. No pun intended. David Hume, a sceptic Scottish philosopher, he said he often goes for a much more middle road approach to things. Much less extreme, a bit less sensationalist, but I think ultimately much more true to life. He said that people are, you know, in parts good, in parts bad. So they're not as horrible as Hobbes says, but they're not as great as some people think they are as well. We are, I think generally, he says we're generally more inclined to help those closest to us because it's more convenient. I'm more likely to help my members of my family than the members of someone else's family. You're more likely to help someone in your own country than in another one, which seems to ring true, doesn't it? We have our little inner circle of friends and family who we would put out for sort of help and stuff, but then outside that, people don't bother. And I think that's a fair assumption, but we're more likely to be selfish and a bit lazy than actually brutish and barbaric, like Hobbes seems to point out. But let's go on to John Stuart Mill. He was a utilitarian. He basically argued that human nature took a different approach. He said that happiness is the only thing that's desirable in itself. He claims that the only proof of desirability is that that we desire it. So no need to really go into too much detail about that. He says the only thing he argues that a person desires only happiness for its own sake. And so our life is basically controlled by avoiding pain and pursuing happiness. This is a huge topic. I'm just sort of skimming through it to get to the main points. And he also said he was a libertarian. He sort of argued that states can intervene, but it should be mainly for our protection. People should be allowed to live however they like, being as weird and eccentric. And he thought that individualism was very important, because if we're all allowed to live in our own weird way, then there's more likely that a genius will be able to flourish. Genius needs to be nurtured, and it doesn't matter how weird, whether you've got a weirdo in your local library that doesn't wear shoes, so long as they're not harming anyone, it's fine. He says as long as you don't encroach on someone else's freedom, then you're free to do whatever you want, really. So Mill then Phil writes and goes, Hume is useless. He said we are born with no innate knowledge. But how could you prove we've got innate knowledge, Phil? I'd like that. It's a sidetrack, but an interesting one. Because is there a difference between, I suppose you'd argue from the point of view of instincts, like with a baby, you throw a baby in a swimming pool and it can somehow swim, but I think that's not knowledge, is it? You now need to define knowledge, and knowledge justify true belief. Topic for another time, maybe. But I think Hume is very perceptive when it comes to human nature. I think on describing that we're neither totally evil or totally good, we're a sort of a mishmash of both, I think it's very perceptive. I'd even go as far to say, I don't say this very often on Idle Talk, I really think that Hume was right. I agree with David. So let's get back on track here. Where are we? So Mill said that he basically argued for democracy because it allows us to sort of exercise our freedoms. He says it plays an important epistemic role in identifying the common good. Proper deliberation about issues affirming the common good requires us to argue and discuss and bear in mind the interests of different affected parties. So a certain degree of representation is definitely in the interest of the citizens. So we sort of become ourselves more, become better human beings via a democratic process. It's certainly he wouldn't like Hobbes's view on things. He'd say that that was a tyrannical government, that it would step upon the liberty of the individual. It's very, very different type of thinking. Hobbes is looking, Hobbes says the sovereign should represent the people as if it were one person, the rights of society as one entity, whereas Mill is much more interested in the rights of individual people. And he wrote a lot about the tyranny of the majority, how it could actually be wrong that, say you have, where he said you get situations, if democracy goes wrong, you have a tyranny of the majority. Say if, let's use some arbitrary numbers, 500 people want a swimming pool. There are 100 people living in the place where they want to build a swimming pool. You're harming less people than you're bringing pleasure to, so could you demolish their houses and just build a swimming pool anyway? He would want to argue against that, so he goes to sort of defend the right of the individual and the minority group. It's interesting. I want to do some more on Mill, and I'll talk about Mill and especially his take on eccentricity, because gives me an excuse to be a weirdo, to be honest, and I rather appreciate that. Any excuse, really. So happiness, blah blah blah. Where are we? Yeah, he said that basically democracy is important. It makes us exercise our faculties. He seems to claim that freedom of inquiry and he says it helps us progress as human beings, democracy, because it makes us value freedom. He also thinks that democracy is the best form of government as it makes us think, and it improves our perception and our sort of moral capacities as well. So he kind of very much going against Hobbes. He wouldn't like he wouldn't be a fan of the sovereign of all sovereigns.
Idle Talk on One Radio.
So, to recap, John Stuart Mill argued for democracy sort of in three ways. He said it was good for us because it made us sort of just use our brains and be better human beings, sort of use our moral faculties, and like sort of muscles, you can exercise these faculties and get better at it and become a better person. He says it was sort of practically better because decisions made by more people are generally more reliable, more heads are meant to more odds of coming up with a better answer. So it's more likely to, it forces decision makers to take into account what the majority of people actually feel about. And it's also, he says that it's the freest form of government. He said that no substantial famine has ever occurred in any independent country with a democratic form of government and a relatively free. So that's how Mill basically argued for democracy. Trouble is, it all seems very nice, doesn't it? I think it's very idealistic, because the trouble is, he assumes that everyone would engage. Most people don't engage democratically. Most people just vote. It's like football teams. You pick your team, Labour, Conservative, etc., and you back them no matter what. My family's always been voting for this or that. You know, you get this. Families, you tend to vote the same way as your parents. And most voters are just generally so ill-informed about the way the world works that is their vote really worth anything anyway? You go out to, I mean, I saw a brilliant bit done by the Howard Stern Show in which they sent some reporters out and they grabbed people and they started reading up McCain's policies to people, to Obama voters, and the Obama voters didn't have a clue. They didn't have a clue what Obama was standing for. And it just sort of proved that the majority of people that they found voting for Obama, or did voting for anyone, just don't have a clue. They do not have a clue. So it's almost just adding a degree of danger and lottery, because you never know how people are going to vote, because they don't vote rationally at all. You know, that's why a lot of... I think some people just vote on whether... how nice a suit the politician is wearing. So, basically, what's your opinion on this? I think Mill is slightly too optimistic, but I don't think, really don't think, a sovereign is the right way forward, although it would happen a lot quicker. Do you know, I really believe that the best form of government would be a dictatorship, so long as you had a benevolent dictator. Because if he had the majority of people's interests at heart, and we all flourished, and because you wouldn't have to muck about, you wouldn't have to bother waiting on things, you could just make decisions, and if certain people were suffering, the dictator wouldn't have to vote on stuff or appease businessmen. You say, right, go sort that out now, deal with it. But the trouble is, the odds of having a benevolent dictator, as was brought up earlier, that old quote, absolute power corrupts, the odds of having a nice dictator is very, very small. So I guess for the sake of our own safety, we have to go for some form of democracy, because at least the government can get booted out after 5 years. But within 5 years, they still have a hell of a lot of time and opportunity to just wreck the place, don't they? So, what do I think? Human nature, I think we are generally selfish, but not all totally evil. We are more likely to help out. I'm going to go for a Hume's sort of point, where we're more likely to help our inner circle of people than we are people outside that. And so I reckon, begrudgingly, I'm going to have to admit some form of democracy that we have at the moment might be the best solution. On a very small scale, communism does work, but it has to be on, like, who wants to live on, like, a little farm? No one does. The trouble is that we never really built political systems to have this many people involved. There's far too many people in the world at the moment. Phil writes in and says the reptilian monarchy are trying to shut down Rodder's show. A David Icke supporter. Always good to have the Icke people in the shout box today. Aquave says, I tend to vote tactically nowadays. Aquave, you also said, I believe you said earlier, that you say it's a democratic right and also a duty to, so I always vote, but I tend not to see the point. So you sort of, I guess you exercise your faculties as a free human being, but then are also a little bit despairing of the system. I feel like that. If I don't vote, I tend to spoil my paper, ballot paper, because then at least I've actually made an effort to exercise a right. But also, if it is your right, you also have the right not to use it. So I don't really understand. I get very annoyed when people, you have to vote. Oh, you have to. No, well, no, you don't. It's my right to go and, I don't know, lie out in the garden. But it doesn't mean I have to. I could spend the entire summer indoors and not go near the garden. I still have the right to the garden. Doesn't mean I have to go in it. Rights don't work like that. Right implies choice, doesn't it? Duty, I'm not sure where you would derive a sense of duty. People get very sentimental and emotional. People died for you to have the vote. Well, I never asked them to. You know, anyway, oneradio.org, that's pretty much wrapping up the end of the show. Thank you for all your comments tonight. The results, as usual in philosophy, are inconclusive. The jury is out. I think I might do some more political philosophy. Also, just quickly, should mention, for those of you who don't like subscribing to this show on iTunes, you can now get full episodes of Idle Talk available on Audioboo. So go to audioboo.fm/idletalk for past episodes, and this episode will be up in a day or so. So thank you very much for listening. I'm away next week. I'm off on a climbing holiday. Very much looking forward to that. But the week after, Idle Talk should be back with more debate and more mind-boggling. This is Rodders signing out for Idle Talk on oneradio.org.